You're listening to the Family Matters Podcast, brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Join Derek A. Straker and Patrick Webb weekly for faith-fueled conversations about pressing issues, current events, and politics in the Big Sky State. When it comes to faith and freedom, family really matters. Welcome to episode 3 of the Family Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Derek A. Straker, joined today, as always, with Patrick Webb. How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm great today, Derek. How are you?
I'm excited today because we're going to talk about one of mine, and I know your favorite topics. We're going to talk all about school choice, educational freedom. So I'm excited. How about you?
Yeah, no, it's a good topic, and one of our four categories or areas that the Montana Family Foundation focuses on, and something that impacts, I think, everyone in our community, even people who don't have children. I think it's impacting people in more ways than one.
Oh yeah, I mean, you don't need children to pay taxes, right? So you're contributing to, you know, that tax base that goes to fuel our public system of education. School choice really is an alternative to meet those needs for kids in that system, in the educational system, whose needs aren't being met. You know, whether that's a special needs student, whether that's a really overachieving student, or just a student who doesn't learn well in that particular educational environment. So, you know, school choice is a really exciting topic, because, you know, from my perspective and from the perspective of a lot of school choice advocates, it really transcends partisan politics.
Yeah. And I want to take a moment really quick before we dig into this, because there's a lot to dig into here, especially in Montana. We've had some really great developments over the past couple of years to announce. Next week is National School Choice Week. So that is, of course, we tell people on this podcast that we aim to have timely topics. And that is the goal with this topic. We want to kind of start off the conversation before School Choice Week is even here. And probably about the time folks are listening to this, that's about the time that's going to be rolling out. And we are going to be hosting an event that our team is working very diligently on at the Yellowstone County Courthouse Park on Friday, January 26th from noon to 1 p.m. There will be some speakers there. There'll be some food. And we're going to celebrate school choice and the opportunities that provides to parents and especially the children in our communities. And we would very much love for anyone listening to this to join us. Again, that's from noon to 1 p.m. on Friday, January 26th.
That's awesome. And we'll be there, right, Patrick? I mean, if you're listening and you're in Billings and want to stop on by at that event and support the cause, look for the tallest people there. That's a pretty good bet that it's you or me, right?
They'll find us.
So let's jump into this, Patrick. I mean, school choice, educational freedom, when we talk about, you know, that as a general concept, I mean, it takes many different forms, right? We have education savings accounts. We have school vouchers. We have tax credit education savings accounts. We have tax credit scholarships. We have individual tax credits and deductions. In terms of how to put this in place, there's many different types of school choice mechanisms, right? So maybe we should dive in and describe what each one of these are.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. And I would really like to just kind of, you know, these are all different policy prescriptions to solving a problem. And that problem is that the education that our children may be receiving is not adequate. Now, we have all, you know, I went to the public school system. I went to private school for a little bit of time too, and I received a ton of education from my parents at home. And I'm grateful for all of those opportunities. I had great teachers. I had some teachers that I wasn't as big a fan of. But Montana's state constitution specifically emphasizes the goal of providing an education system that develops the full educational potential of each person. That is a mandate in our constitution. And in Montana, we are seeing declining scores. And when I say declining scores, I'm referring to the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or the NAEP. That is oftentimes used as kind of the national scorecard on this topic. And in Montana, well, nationwide, this covers reading and mathematics largely. And in Montana, from about 2015 to 2019, the percent of students scoring at or above proficient declined from 37% to 34%. And then in 2017 to 2022, that percent scoring at or above proficient declined by 9% from 38 to 29. So these results are really showing that we are seeing a gradual decline in the performing capability of students across Montana. And that's not just in reading, that's in mathematics. I mean, at the end of this, 71% of eighth grade students are scoring below basic or basic, and they're not de demonstrating proficiency. And so I think ultimately what this is saying is that for the past 11 years, student achievement in Montana has been falling steadily. So these prescriptions that you had mentioned, these are things that we want to look at. Are these the right fit for Montana? Are these what we need in order to provide more opportunities for kids to excel in education and for parents to be able to have these tools at their fingertips? And I think it's also important to, briefly mention, like, what is the cause behind this? A lot of people like to say that, this is, well, COVID-19, right? COVID-19 was this kind of anomaly situation that no one could have prepared for. It's no one's fault. This is just, the way that things fell from having a, schooling system that basically went through a pandemic. And in Montana, we are lucky that we actually only had school closures for a very minimal amount of time. In other parts of the country, long periods of time that I think definitely impacted education in a greater way. But this decline has been going on for years prior to COVID. This started before COVID-19. And so we really need to make sure that we look in the mirror and we say, hey, this is something that we need to look at. This is our policies that are in place that may be causing this decline. This is not some, pandemic that is outside of our control that's caused all these problems. It's not our fault. It is. Like, we need to look in the mirror. We need to take responsibility for the children in our communities, in our society, and figure out what can we do to empower them. It's very, very critical.
I love all that, Patrick. You start with the constitutional charter, as it were. Here in Montana, every student has a right to an equal educational opportunity. It's an individual right. It's not you're entitled to an equal education. It's equal educational opportunity. And I love that language because it really matches well with what we believe in the school choice or educational freedom movement. And I think, when I mention that school choice and educational freedom transcends partisan politics, I think it's really tempting at times to dig in your heels on this issue and get really defensive. If you are a teacher listening, and you hear these statistics and you hear people say, that our education system is failing students, I mean, how could you not take that personally? You're a part of that system and you're going to work every day doing the very best you can for these kids. We believe that. But we also think that the system itself is just overburdened. I mean, that's one way of looking at this. The system itself is overburdened. And because of that overburden, it's not meeting those needs for kids. The system itself is not designed to empower parents to give them choices. That's another way of looking at it. So, That's why I say this can transcend partisan politics. If we're just looking at that individual mandate for each kid, that we're going to provide the best educational environment in terms of an educational opportunity for each child, then we don't have to prop up the institution of public education. We don't have to prop up any institution. We just need to focus on what's going to be best for each individual student. What's the best educational environment we can place them in to be successful, to have that opportunity?
Yeah, and it's important for people to understand that our schooling system and our education system at large was put in place to meet problems that are ancient to us now. The problem of making sure that we had literate individuals who could come and work in industry, mass industry during industrialization. We often see, you know, where we hear the school bells. These were largely put in place to mimic the factory, to get students ready to work in a factory someday. We have these remnants in our education system that people have held on to very tightly for a long time. The term that I think, you know, everyone should consider to take a look at, protectionism. That has existed in the industry for too long. It has held on to antiquated, you know, ancient ideas that don't really have a place right now in a highly specialized economy like we have today. And our education system should change with the times. We are seeing that. But we've got to take it as a serious challenge. I like to share this story with individuals about a prize-winning agronomist, Norman Borlaug, and he was actually credited with saving over 1 billion lives. And some people have heard his story, but what they don't know is that we almost lost Norman Borlaug's contribution to society. He was trying to get into college. Very unfortunately, they instituted the standardized test, and he was not very good at tests, and he failed. He didn't do good on it at all. And they said, sorry, you can't come to college. And luckily, by the skin of his teeth, he was able to get into junior college, which started to become a thing around that time. And he got in barely, but they realized once he got in that this guy was a genius and that he had something to offer society. And he went on to inventing a drought-resistant wheat. And while the global elites were telling everyone that we were going to see Africa and India starve to death, he did this, and he, again, is credited with saving 1 billion people, a billion lives. And so I think the question that, you know, keeps me up at night and other people who work in this industry or work on education freedom issues is, how many students who are now disengaged from their learning have we lost their contributions to society? Because they no longer have a interest in education and seeking their passions and ultimately making a difference in this world and helping other people. And that is absolutely the driving force behind why we have got to continue to work together to find better ways to make a difference for our kids and, you know, create a more robust education system that meets theirs and their parents' needs.
I love that story. And you've shared that with me before, and I'm glad you shared it for our listeners. I mean, what an amazing story. And boy, I hope we haven't lost contributions like that. You know, I hate to think that we have, and I hope we haven't. I hope everyone gets to meet and reach their God-given potential and follow God's purpose for their lives. Let's switch gears a little bit here, Patrick, and let's talk about the types of school choice and just kind of define it for our listeners. I've got five that I mentioned earlier on in this episode. Education savings accounts, or ESAs, you might hear them referred to as ESAs. They allow parents, they really empower parents, to withdraw their child from a public district or charter school and receive a deposit of public funds into a government-authorized savings account with some restricted, but multiple uses. So they can use those funds to cover private school education tuition and fees, or online learning programs, private tutoring for their child, community college, higher education expenses, or some other approved and customized learning services. So it's all related to education. But imagine having, you know, a separate account that's just devoted to providing your child the best educational environment for them to succeed.
And while we're on this topic, you know, I would highly, I think it's a great idea that we kind of focus on this issue so that we can see, like, is this something that Montana is working on right now? And then, you know, jump into the next issue. And I think our listeners will be able to keep it all straight if we kind of, like, you know, relay where we're at in Montana.
I think that's a great idea. But for ESAs,
yeah,
we are working on that.
Absolutely.
That's what's really exciting. We have a special needs ESA here in Montana. It was just implemented this past session. And I know the folks at our Office of Public Instruction are working on implementing that program as we speak to provide parents and empower parents with special needs children with these types of accounts so that they can use those funds to put their children in the best educational environment for that individual child. It's never been the case in Montana prior to this past legislative session last year. And here we are with this wide open opportunity for families here in Montana.
Yeah. And we will stay in touch with our listeners as that program begins to be implemented, that if you yourself or individuals that you know could potentially benefit from this program, we're going to do everything we can to educate our communities across the state so that you can benefit from this.
Well, and I really want to give a shout out to Representative Sue Vinton. She was a champion this past session for educational freedom. This was her bill, the special needs ESA bill. And she was also the champion for a charter school or community choice school bill that we'll talk about a little bit later. But Representative Sue Vinton did an incredible job to advance school choice here in Montana.
Yeah, and outside of that, you know, I think the hope is that eventually we do have this type of system in place for every Montana student. And that I know is absolutely the vision behind a lot of people that are working on this effort. But sometimes, you know, change is slow and it takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, it does. You know, these policies, you know, as much as we'd like to see these sweeping changes, they do take time. They take time to implement. They take time to educate people. But I think we're coming around here in Montana. Another one I want to talk about that isn't currently in Montana, but it's something that other states are doing. It's similar to an ESA or an education savings account. It's called a school voucher program. So vouchers give parents the freedom to choose a private school for their child, and they use all or part of public funding set aside for their child's education at that private institution. So similar to an ESA, but that describes a school voucher program. We don't currently have that in Montana, but maybe someday. Maybe someday we provide that sort of option to families and empower parents and children here in Montana through that type of program. Another one I would talk about is the Tax Credit Education Savings Account. So a tax credit ESA. This type of program allows taxpayers to receive full or partial tax credits when they donate to nonprofit organizations that fund and manage parent-directed K-12 education savings accounts. We have a tax credit scholarship program here in Montana. It's not a tax credit ESA. So again, a slightly different program. A tax credit scholarship allows taxpayers to receive full or partial tax credits when they donate to nonprofits that provide private school scholarships. That's what we have here in Montana. And last session, we increased the aggregate limit for that tax credit scholarship from $2 million total to $5 million total. And let me tell you, each year, that limit gets met within like the first 10 or 15 minutes of it opening. It's incredible the money that pours in for these scholarships, and it provides educational opportunities to children all throughout the state. It's incredible.
Yeah, the demand is there, and our legislators saw that, and luckily they were able to increase that so that can be a greater benefit to more people across Montana.
Well, and across the country, you know, Montana would not be unique in having these school choice programs. Montana is one of 32 other states that are using school choice right now. You know, we talked about some of the programs that we have here in Montana, you know, but you can take a look at a map of the country, and more than half of the states are using these types of programs to empower families and kids in their education.
So I think another one that was a really great thing that came through, piece of legislation that came through this last cycle, was what we're calling the Community Choice Schools Act in House Bill 562. And these are charter schools, is the idea behind these. And ultimately, what this is it's an independently operated tuition-free public school. So it's kind of confusing because, you know, we're very used to, you know, kind of the black or white. It's either public school or it's private school or it's not. This is somewhat of a convergence between private and public, but as far as, you know, we kind of understand it, law does decide that these are defined as public schools. And these are meant to, again, just be another option for parents to be able to have their kids find something that meets their needs, maybe more than what the traditional schooling provides. And very thankful for everyone that worked on that, and thankful for the board right now, or the panel appointed by the governor, that is working right now to make sure that this program is implemented correctly. But as far as I understand it, we have some challenges still. And as our listeners will not be too new to this idea, it's coming from our court system. Is that right, Derek?
Yeah, that is right. You know, as is unfortunately all too often the case, when we have these policies that we support and we have these legislative victories, you know, oftentimes they're challenged in court. This particular one, again, you know, this was Sue Vinton's bill, House Bill 562. It was challenged here in Lewis and Clark County, where we are, Patrick. It's in front of Judge Christopher Abbott, a district court judge, a state district court judge. Judge Abbott partially enjoined this bill. He allowed the commission, the School Choice Commission that you were referencing, to be created. And so that commission has been having meetings, has been under the general supervision of the Board of Public Education, which is a constitutional requirement. And part of the challenge in that court case, the challengers are saying, well, it's not under the general supervision of the Board of Public Education. But if you go to these meetings, you can see that it is. So this commission has been allowed to form, but, you know, they haven't been allowed to create community choice schools and authorize them. So that's the part of the bill that's been enjoined. And what injunction, or when I say enjoined, it just means that the decision is put on ice. It's the judge isn't going to decide that until there's a full trial on the merits, on the substance of the case. But he's not going to allow that part of the law to be enforced at this time until they conduct further hearings and gather more evidence and have a full trial on the merits. So it's almost like it's put on pause.
So I think one thing that, you know, the layman like myself has a hard time understanding is, when I see that these bills are here, that these bills are enjoined, it seems to me like a delay tactic that the court uses to prevent legislation that they maybe don't agree with, especially if they're activist judges. And they just delay these things as long as they can so that they can't be implemented. And ultimately, this is hurting students. So I think to our listeners, is there a time limit on how long something can be, you know, enjoined?
No. The short answer, Patrick, is no. I wish there was, and there are mechanisms that the courts can review their order, and you can request to dissolve an injunction after a period of time. But the reality is, some injunctions can last for years and even decades. We have one case right now that we wrote an amicus brief in support of the state that involved a pro-life bill. It was about parental consent before a minor child could have an abortion. And that bill was enjoined more than a decade ago. And it's just now on appeal to the Montana Supreme Court. So that's how long injunctions can last. So it's unfortunate, but it is a mechanism of our courts. And there are ways to combat it, and we certainly try. But it is what it is. There is no mechanism right now to say the injunction can only last for so long.
So what other types of education choice policy prescriptions do we have? Are these kind of the main ones? Obviously, there's some tinkering. So some when I say tinkering in this in it, I mean just like trying to make what we have right now better. And I think one thing that was a tremendous win has been open enrollment in the public school system and just making it, now legal, which hopefully this is, probably something that some people on here need to know, is that Montanans now have the right to be able to unenroll their child from a school district. And as long as they can take care of the transportation needs, and there is an open seat in that neighboring school district, they can bring, enroll their child in that neighboring school district. And I mean, it could be as far away as you want, I suppose, but of course it's limited by how far you want to commute getting
Well,
your kid to school.
that's right. I mean, with gas prices as they are right now, I think that's kind of a limitation on that program. But yeah, that opens up a world of possibilities for parents who might want to take their kid from one school in one district and put them in a better performing school or a school that's going to better suit their child's needs in another district. And that was, I think, a very wise piece of legislation that our Montana elected officials got passed this last session as well. Another thing that I find very compelling when we talk about school choice, you're always hearing how our public school system just is so underfunded. There's not enough money. And when you talk with parents and you talk with even school administrators, and you're trying to figure out, well, how much money per student is actually allocated to schools in our area, I think one of the most surprising things, and you if you're listening today, you can go look at this. It's called Project Nickel. Project Nickel. Type that in. You can type in any school in the country, and they will tell you precisely how much money per student per year is allocated to each school in the country. And it's startling. Some of these figures are just staggering. I looked in the Helena area where we are, and just to take a look at some nearby schools, Bryant School in the Helena area in Lewis and Clark County, $13,353 per student per year. $13,000. Central School, $12,658 per student. Eastgate, $10,810 per student. Hawthorne, $10,470. Incredible, staggering. When you think about how many students attend that school, you think about that's a lot of money, Patrick. It adds up. And then you get to thinking, well, how much does it cost to send a child to, let's say, a private school? The first one that came to mind for me is Helena Christian School, because that's our area. You take a look at Helena Christian School tuition rates. for a kindergarten to fifth grade student for 1 year is $5,400. For a sixth grade to 12th grade student, it's $6,300. So we're talking so much less than what's allocated to these public schools. And it's amazing when you then take a look at the performance of these private schools and how they're doing on standardized tests and how they're doing on reading levels. And it is just, it's really incredible data.
And I think it's really incredible, especially to parents who are not used to paying for their children's education up front. Obviously, we still pay for it on the back end through our property tax increases, mill levies, things like that, that come on the ballot. But a lot of parents, especially if you have kids in the public school system, you don't see those numbers. And, you know, not to say that our teachers are not worth, you know, paying well to educate our children, but what a wake up call when you have this idea in your mind that, oh, well, the local private school is so expensive and unaffordable, when in reality, you're paying more than that just sending your child to a public school system, or at least the system is subsidizing a way greater amount. And that knowledge of what the investment looks like is a really critical mindset that Montanans need to carry.
And boy, if your money followed your child, your tax dollars followed your child, I mean, that would just empower families to find the best possible school. And what parent out there doesn't want to provide the best possible opportunity for their child? I mean, that's just, I think it's innate to parenting a child. You want to give them the very best that you can. And this school choice movement is all about that. So I think as we wrap up, I mean, what final thoughts do you have for our listeners, Patrick?
I would encourage people to take a look at our website. Again, that's montanafamily.org. And you can see some of our priorities that we're working on. You're also going to see some, you know, press releases, news announcements. Sometimes every single once a week, our president CEO, Jeff Lasloff, he puts up a radio update, and sometimes he covers these topics too. And so, you know, please stay plugged in, check out our Facebook, check out our social media. I would also highly recommend, you know, a lot of these resources that we're sharing with people. We got these from some of our partners that share some of this information. They do a lot of the deep digging. And so that's groups like EdChoice. Highly recommend you check out them. They do great work. A Montana-based think tank, the Montana Frontier Institute. Check out the Frontier Institute. And those are other great resources to get a deeper grasp on this issue. And as we move towards the legislative session next year, we are absolutely going to be continuing to bring the heat so that we can make sure that our education system fits our children's needs, and just, yeah, encourage people to learn what you can, stay plugged in, and we're making progress. So keep hope.
Well, obviously we are really excitable on the topic of educational freedom, and you know, we could talk for hours and hours about this, and we will talk about this in future episodes in more detail. I think it's really great to provide our listeners with an overview. So thank you so much for tuning in today to the Family Matters podcast. We talk about school choice and educational freedom because your kids matter, your families matter. And, you know, if you have the opportunity to put your kid in the best educational environment for them, then we don't want to stand in your way. We want to empower that. So with that, I thank you for listening, and God bless.